The following talk was presented on the 16th of April 2023 by spiritual leader Phyllis Grace and is entitled My Family Tree.
Thank you, Julian, and good morning, everyone. It's lovely to be here again with you. Not so sunny here in Adelaide, but I'm sure that the footy fans are all enjoying whatever they're watching, wherever they are. It's a great weekend for football, if you're interested. So, the family tree. How many of you watched the program? Who do you think you are? I don't watch it very often, and yet I have watched enough to know that the focus is on tracing the family history and discovering the lineage of the individuals. And while some of us were waiting for 10 o'clock to arrive, your time that is, no, 10:30 your time, 10 o'clock mine, we heard some interesting stories of people who have gone into their family tree and found some interesting ancestors there. But where did the family originate is often what people are looking for. And of course, as each of us has a biological mother and a father, they usually look at the origins of each side of the family to discover that often there is a good mixture of country of origin on both sides of the family. This has become a focus of many individuals as they research their family tree to unearth their lineage and to discover how Australian, English, European, Asian, etc., they may be. Or even if there is someone famous in their family lineage, or maybe, as we heard earlier, a convict whom they were unaware. The Bible, I realised, both the Hebrew scriptures and the Christian scriptures, has several places where the genealogy of certain people or even peoples and persons are listed. So we might assume that the origin of the family was important. The first book of the Christian scriptures, Matthew, lists the genealogy of Jesus. We may wonder why, and yet, on consideration, we can see that the writer wanted to show that Jesus was very much of the Israelite people because of his genealogy was traced from Abraham, and also that he was very much of royal blood because his genealogy could also be traced from King David. This was important as well, so the writer could show that the birth of Jesus was fulfilling the prophecies found in the Hebrew scriptures. Was Jesus concerned about this? I don't think so, because we read that during his life, Jesus spoke with, healed, and encouraged Canaanites, prostitutes, the Moabite women, all of whom were generally snubbed by the Israelites. And as we know, Jesus so often went against the teachings of his culture to be true to what he believed was the best way to live by embracing everyone with love and compassion. Yes, I'm sure he knew his lineage, but he didn't let it influence the way he lived his life so that his heart was singing. The family history can be an interesting study as long as we don't get caught up in the histrionics, I think. The German lyric poet and novelist Detlef von Lilligren was dining with a group of noblemen one evening when one boasted at length about his ancestors, who had fought in the Crusades, sailed with Columbus, and so forth. Lilligren finally said to the nobleman, "You remind me of a potato." "How so?" said the nobleman. And Lilligren replied, "The best part is underground." I found that so amusing. The best part is underground. Yes, if we get caught up in what the ancestors do instead of worrying about now, the now moment, then we can be really in stride. So it's a great example, I thought, that little story I just told, of how caught up in the past accomplishments of our ancestors we can become, disregarding any contribution that we can make right now in our lives, or even have made in the near past, and help our community in which we live. Yes, it is great to acknowledge those past happenings, but to me, it is far more important to look at how we can make a difference in our community and world. And as I shared earlier, I really haven't been interested in looking at my family history. However, I do know some of my relatives have, but I haven't heard anything outstanding as yet. But I like to think that we're all doing what we can and living our best life right now. But have you ever noticed how some parents and even grandparents, and perhaps even grandparents more so than parents, seem to live their lives through the accomplishments of their children or their grandchildren? No, I'm not suggesting that we disregard those achievements. I think that's very important, but rather honour them and not be so caught up in them that the conversation always returns to the same subject. I know a few people who do that, and it's like, oh, not again. However, I do understand family is very important, and I love being a part of a family. But I think it's also very important that it's reasonably balanced and honours the individual differences within each member. We all have different traits, all have different interests and different abilities, and acknowledging and accepting them is important. My goodness, how I've had some times in my life when people just don't accept where I'm coming from, and that's okay. I'm happy with where I come from. It's important to me. And have you ever observed others doing something and maybe wondered why? And yet when we give it some thought, we may realise that the action, behaviour, mannerisms are possibly something they have inherited from their children, or from their parents, not their children, from their parents. And yet I wonder if, as children, we observe the actions and behaviours of our parents so closely because of the bond we have formed or want to form with them, that we take on their mannerisms as a way of showing our love. Whenever I see my oldest nephew, whose father died when he was just 7 years old, I am amazed at how like his mannerisms, the way he talks, and the way he stands are like his father. It's like I'm looking at his father when I'm looking at him. He has very different interests than his father had that I remember. And he looks very like his father. And that can be inherited, of course. But the stance and the mannerisms, I just wonder, he was only seven when his father died, and yet they are ingrained in him. But what I also wondered, is that inherited or is it imitation? Is it imitation? Is it imitation of the father that my nephew knew as a small boy and connected so closely with that he took on those mannerisms, that stance? I was with some of my grandchildren last weekend, and one of the boys said, oh, his mother, he was standing apart from a daughter, and she was working with, looking away from the group he and I were in. And she turned and then she said, oh, my goodness. And she said, oh, I just thought it was your father standing there. And Jackson said, yes, I do sometimes feel I'm standing just like Dad does. And And it's so interesting. I often listen to myself and I think, oh, that's my mother talking. And I always said I wasn't going to be like her, but there you go. But I wonder, are these inherited traits or is it imitation? There's an old saying, the imitation is the highest or sincerest form of flattery. There are skills we possess that we take for granted, like our speech, our gross motor and fine motor movements, our play skills and social emotional skills that we learn through imitation. I would suggest that there are habits, beliefs and alliances that we have taken on as our own because someone we admired, loved or even inspired us shared that same conviction, that same alliance, or that same habit. And I wonder how many of us have really questioned if we are being true to ourselves by accepting those habits, those beliefs, or those alliances from others. At the moment, I'm reading a fictional book, and yet there's a fascinating story in it that shows this so clearly, how we can take on habits without giving it any thought. The main character in the book and her father are drovers who are contracted by farmers to fatten their stock, who are near starving because of drought and the result of overstocking the parched land. The two drovers herd the stock and gently move them along little used dirt country roads where the grass and native vegetation grows without interference from ploughs or grazing. After a few months of gently moving them along just the dirt roads and gently tending the herds, they are quietened and fattened, ready for sale to the abattoir or the calves sold on to other farmers. The father and daughter often talk as they're driving about the farming practices that the stock owners use and can see that there is a much better way because they have experienced them very rarely, but they have seen them. And I know for a fact that the lady who wrote the book uses the practices that are very different to the old ways in her own life. But too often the farmers are oblivious to the fact that their practices are outdated and simply not beneficial to the land, our planet, or even humankind or the animals that they farm. I imagine that if most of them were asked why they do things the way they do, many would reply, well, it's how my dad did it. If it was good enough for him, then it's good enough for me. What they don't realise is that a lot of those practices are really damaging the land so badly that it can get to the stage where it's beyond being brought back to real life. And I have found this just fascinating. And I love the fact that this lady is using the practices that she's talking about in her real life. She's a Tasmanian farmer and has written this fictional book about all sorts of, it's a love story and a family story, you name it. But it's fascinating. But there is a story that tells of the woman who always cut the knuckle off the leg of lamb before she put it in the pan. Observing her daughter one day preparing the meal, the mother asked, why are you cutting the knuckle off? And the daughter replied, well, that's what you always did. And the mother laughed out loud and says, well, I cut the knuckle off because my pan wasn't big enough to take the whole leg. The daughter joined her mother laughing because she realised how foolish her actions were because her pan was certainly big enough to take the whole leg. How strange. She hadn't realised. I guess she thought there must be a reason Mum did this, so I'll do it too without asking. Why? Isn't that so often the case? too often. Too often we do things without wondering why we do that. And if there may be a better way. Yes, our family tree is an interesting study, and will tell us about our ancestors, and we may find out some very interesting facts about our ancestors. But let's not get attached to the history to the extent that we're not living in the moment and living our life doing what makes our hearts sing. You hear too often of children being guided by their parents, which is all very good, but to the extent that they feel obliged to take on the same profession as their parents or one of their parents, and it's not really what they want to do. I find that very sad to think that that happens so often. It's the family tradition to be lawyers or the family tradition to be doctors. Well, not everybody wants to be that. We need to honour the individuals. As I prepare a talk, I usually like to see, well, what does Charles say about this? And yes, he did write about ancestors. In The Revealing Word, I read, he wrote, ancestors, forefathers, those who think of themselves as descendant from human ancestors are in bondage to all the limitations of their ancestors, regardless of their claims to the contrary. It is falling short of the full stature of man to regard himself as descending from the human family. This, he says, is the sin that keeps the majority of men in bondage to sense consciousness. Wow, what's he talking about here? And then I remembered his story and, of course, Myrtle's story. And Myrtle's story is the one we hear most of. And I will very briefly go through that. As a child, she grew up hearing the fact that tuberculosis was an inherited illness in her family. She was a deep thinker, but took on this thought, tuberculosis is inherited and in my family. And consequently, she was diagnosed with that disease. She went to many, many doctors and healers and took all sorts of strange medicines and potions to try and get some relief. But all the ills of mind and body were so unbearable that she was willing to try anything. During her struggles with this disease, she and her husband Charles had become interested in New Thought teachings. And one evening they went to a talk by E.B. Weeks, and you may have seen the quote when you saw the information for this week's service. And E.B. Weeks said at this talk, "You are a child of God and you do not inherit sickness." A very bold statement that many would challenge and be challenged by. Child of God, don't inherit sickness? How foolish could he be? But to Myrtle, it spoke loudly. She was inspired by these words, took them to heart, and from that night on, used prayer, meditation, and forgiveness and love to change her mindset and realign her body with the wholeness and health she believed was her rightful inheritance. Within 2 years, she was healed and lived another 40 years, well into her 80s. Myrtle demonstrated the power of the mind over the body. Myrtle used her understanding of her God-given potential, her divine inheritance, not just her human inheritance, but her divine inheritance. And after much dedication to practice of prayer, meditation, forgiveness, and nurturing her body with good nutrition and physical well-being, that divinity became expressed through her body temple, and freed herself of the disease. Her healing would have been seen, and is still seen by many, as a miracle. And yet, her new understanding of spiritual laws was the miracle. Myrtle had an understanding faith and constantly prayed from a consciousness of God. Again, I go to the revealing word, and we read the dictionary definition of a miracle as an event or effect in the physical world beyond or out of the ordinary course of things, deviating from the known laws of nature or transcending our knowledge of these laws. Charles also wrote in the revealing word that a miracle is an event that takes place as a result of the operation of a higher unknown law. In Dynamics for Living, Charles wrote, it is when faith is exercised deep in spiritual consciousness that it finds its right place. And under divine law, without variation or disappointment, it brings results that seemingly are miraculous. Perseverance is required in our use of faith until we make connection with the higher realms of consciousness. It's all up to us to change our mindset, to know our divinity. How do we change our consciousness? It's through changing our thoughts and aligning them with spiritual thoughts, thoughts of health, abundance, wisdom, strength, love, etc. Not only Myrtle, but Charles also demonstrated seeming miracles in their lives by healing what to the medical people of the time and to the community at large were deemed incurable conditions. Myrtle, by rethinking what she had believed as an inherited disease, and Charles, by reversing almost completely the damage incurred in his right side from an accident he had as a seven-year-old boy. Instead of condemning their bodies, they each in their own way blessed it and gave thanks for the life force expressing in and through it moment by moment. Yes, it seemed they performed miracles. We read that Jesus performed miracles, and yet I believe neither Jesus nor the Fillmores saw what they did as miraculous. They simply used spiritual law and made a connection to the higher realm of consciousness. And as Eric Butterworth wrote, there is only one way in which you can, in inverted commas, change your luck, and that is by altering your thoughts. Dare to see yourself as strong, confident, successful, and possessed of the patience and stability to keep on moving in the direction of your dreams. Faith simply tunes into and turns on the divine flow that has always been present. And that's the end of his quote. Yes, honour your forebears, your ancestors, but be true to yourself. Yes, understanding who you are, your culture, your heritage, to see how it may have shaped you and your personality, but see it for what it is. It is your past. More importantly, know you are much more than that. You are a divine being, expressing through the way you show up in the present moment. Let your light shine. Be true to the truth of what you are, an expression of the living spirit within. I invite you now to join with me and as we take a few moments in prayer and meditation. Relax the body, close your eyes or lower them, and as you still the mind, focus on the breath, relaxing into the fullness of spirit. Let go of thoughts of the outer realm and concentrate on the breath, feeling the movement as it flows in and out to nourish your body temple. Know this breath is the life force of God moving in and through you. Let us now recognize and accept our oneness with God, knowing that in this oneness we can transform our thoughts to rise above any circumstance. As we turn within to the light of divine life, love, and wisdom, we harmonize any discords and heal any concerns. With every breath, go deeper into the core of your being and be at peace. Become still, and in this peaceful silence, recognize ways you can support your well-being. Recognize the light of life within and its healing energy moving throughout every cell and fiber of your being. Let's give thanks for this healing power of life and love. In these quiet moments, recognize with faith the abundance that is ever-present in your day-to-day experiences, prospering you in every way. Let our hearts be grateful for the prospering power of divine abundance active within our lives, now and always. As we open our hearts and minds to divine ideas that allow us to perceive the many possibilities that open up in our lives, let us quiet and still the mind in the silence. In the silence. With grateful hearts, let us gently return to this time and this place. Let us give thanks for the opportunity to take time to connect with spirit. as we go forward into the day. Let our light and love shine in every word, action, and thought. And so it is. Amen.